Yeah. Baruch Hashem. Today's daf is in Midos, daf Lamed Hey. We're going to do the second paragraph of Midos today. Okay. I told you the 4 days of Midos that we'll be learning, the five prakim of Midos that we'll be learning, is basically going to be a very short tour of the Beis Hamikdash by Sheni. Okay, I have Bayit Sheni standing right over our head. Let's bring it down a little bit.
Okay. Oh, you might as well put it upside down again.
Yeah, I'm going to take it. Because upside down is all the way up. Let me see. Okay. No. It doesn't need to stand. Yeah. More importantly, is I get to hang on to it a little bit. Okay. All right. Yesterday, we got a very broad look at the Beis Hamikdash with the surrounding Har Habayis. The Mishnayos yesterday in the first parak focused more on the guards that were surrounding the Har Habayis, the guards that were surrounding the Azara, and we talked a little bit about all the gates that allow entrance. The Har Habayis. Now you don't see Har Habayis over here. Meaning, on this picture that's in front of me, all you see is the actual Beis Hamikdash and the Azara. Har Habayis was a square, literally a square that goes all the way around it. Har Habayis area is much larger than the Azara area. The Azara area, as we'll be calculating today, is 135 by 187 amos. Okay, these numbers you'll see in the Mishnayos. This is great. I get to show it to you and read it at the same time. Okay, 135 by 187 amos. So the Har Habayis area is 500 by 500 amos, square amos, so it's obviously a much larger area that surrounds this area over here. So that was the first perek of the Masechta. We start now the second perek.
So we can tell what an amos is if you just measure that thing. There's kind of like,
right, if we measured what they had today.
Could be.
Har Habayis, how you hey amos? Al hey amos. Har Habayis is 500 by 500 amos. Rubo min hadarum. Okay, the majority of it is to the south. Now you have to understand what that line in the Mishnah means. Meaning, once you're dealing with a square, look, I don't know how much we remember from geometry, but let's say this: the definition of a square is that every side of a square is equal, right? we're all together on that. So when the Mishnah says Rubo min hadarum, the majority of it is in the south. Obviously, we're no longer talking about the linear measurement of the southern side, because if it's a square, so then it's 500 amas south as much as it is 500 amas north, east, and west. So what the Mishnah probably means by this, and you can take a look at the Rush. Rush gives you this sense is that the empty area, the empty space of the Har Habayis, because remember now, somewhere in this Har Habayis area, we're going to have the Azara, meaning the temple courtyard, which of course contains the temple therein. And also there's another part with the Ezra's Nashim. We talked about that yesterday. So it's going to be somewhere in the Har Habayis area. Now where could it be? Now you could fix it right in the middle. As I mentioned yesterday, it's going to be wherever it's going to be, meaning sometimes, you know, the layout will speak for itself. But what the Mishnah is telling us is that the way that Har Habayis and the Azara works is that the Azara is more northbound in the Har Habayis area, so that there's a lot of empty space towards the south. I'll show you the Russian side.
So really, can you define what you mean by Har Habayis?
Har Habayis is this square. This square is Har Habayis. Literally, it means mountain of the house, meaning it is the area, and it's walled. It's a perimetered area. It's a walled area where, once you're in the Har Habayis now, you're in a, quote-unquote, a new enclosed area. You had to go past one wall in order to get into Yerushalayim, and now you're going to go into another wall, another enclosed area, to now get into this area called Har Habayis. When you're in Har Habayis, you're already now in an enclosed area. And then you're going to pass through one more wall in order to get into the temple courtyard.
Is that the wall that you see in Yerushalayim?
When we go to the Kotel nowadays, that's the wall of the Har Habayis.
The Kotel
HaMaravi, the western wall, is the western wall. But not this wall. Now, this wall is a wall into the Azara. It's not this wall. Actually, this wall is the wall into the Sorek. But
the outer wall.
The other one. Yeah.
From the
it's all right. Correct. It's all right. It's over here. Right. That's the wall for the Harabais. That's it. So when you go past the Kotel Maravi, you're not in the temple courtyard. In other words, where exactly it is, I'll let people who know better, you know, more informed people tell you. But in other words, when you go past the Kotel Maravi, all you are now is in Har HaBayis.
And the wall that we see around Yerushalayim, it's all Yerushalayim.
That's a wall around Yerushalayim. In other words, when you go into the Yaffa Gate, when you go, that's now the wall of Yerushalayim.
That's Machane Yisrael.
Precisely. Right on. The Rush writes, I'm in the Rush, I'm the first Rush on this Perek. Har Habayis Haya Tafkav Lama Tafkav Zama Nikra Har Hashem Nachon Yeh Har Beis Hashem Berosh HaHarim. So first of all, it's called the mountain, says Rush, because it was actually on the mountaintop, meaning the Beis HaMikdash was situated on the mountaintop. Bayis HaHek of Har Habayis Tafkav Lama Tafkav Zama Miruba, it was squared. Ubo Haya Achel Ves Was Nashim Vazar Vaichel. Remez Latav Kav Orech HaChatzer Mea Be'ama V'rochav Chamishim B'chamishim She'in Tam Lomer B'chamishim Olam She'bechatzer Mishkan Echa Mechal Chamishim She'bar Rabbeis Ketzad Chaluk Tav Kedal. Okay, and then he gives you no, I don't want to do that. Ruba Min Adarim. Next brush. Sorry. Rov Binyan HaLishkot Haya B'dromo Shel Tav Kav Al Tav Kav V'hainu Dichsi B'chezkel. So good. So most of the Lishkas were in towards the south. He quotes the pasuk in Yecheskel, "V'yinechen al har gavol meod va'alav ki bivne ir mi negev shaya mebuna binyan alav mi neged ki idarashi perakam desota v'chever shavashanim nivnasa hadichsiv yerkasei tsarfon kios melech rav lefi shemakum shchitas katche gadash mitzafon." All right, the Rush doesn't seem to be saying what I'm saying. The Rush seems to be saying that more of the building was in the south. That's what Rubam and Adarum means. But you'll see over there that possibly what the Mishnah means by that is the majority of it is open in the south. Okay. Continuing in the Mishnah, Sheni Lamin HaMizrach, Shlish Lamin HaTzafon, then there's more room in the east, more room in the west, and the smallest amount of room... the smallest amount of room is in the west. Makom shehaya rov midaso, shama haya rov tashmisho. Right, where there was more population, where there was more activity, so that's where there was more room and more space. So in other words, most of the people came from the south, so therefore most of the room in the south. And then from that, east. And from that, north. And from that, west. So in other words, it was the west side of Har HaBayis was really the smallest amount of area. Of open area. Kol nichnasim lahar habayis nichnasim derech yaminu malkeifim v'yosin derech smal. So how do you do it? How do you walk into Har HaBayis? So you make right turns. You always make right turns. And so what you're going to do is, remember how we discussed yesterday, there were two entrances into Har HaBayis from the south. So you go in, and presumably you're now going to go in the more eastern of the southern entrances. And you're going to go and you're going to make a right-hand turn and you're going to go counterclockwise, right? That seems to be our general, whenever we have to make a sivuv, we're going to go make a right-hand turn, we're going to go counterclockwise. Now, it's interesting. I always find counterclockwise to be an interesting way to go, because after that first right-hand turn, everything else is always going to be a series of lefts, right? You go onto the Mizbeach, so what do we want you to do? Well, we want you to make a right-hand turn. But then that's going to require you then afterwards to make left, 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 left. So, you know, it's interesting how...
What do you mean by left, left, left?
Look at the Mizbeach. Right, you go up the Mizbeach. You make a right-hand turn. Then what? No, you make a left, and you make a left, and you make a left, and you make a left. In other words, you're going to be making a series of lefts. Because that first turn that you had to make was a right-hand turn. The same thing is true with Har HaBayis. You're coming in from the south... Huh?
Left turns that you make are forced.
Yeah, there was a forced left turn, so they don't count as lefts.
Right.
Okay.
I understand why my wife, when she goes to the mall, she always goes this conflict local. Right. This.
You like to go count. You like to go clockwise. She's right. You gotta tell them. Yeah, I never go. tell them Mishnah Midos. So Mishnah Bay is anyone who goes into the Harabayis nechnas in derech imino and keep from the yotzin derech small. And there's exceptions. So in other words, now you know how traffic goes. Traffic goes to the right. Okay, so when you're going in and you want to walk with traffic, so you go to the right. You always got to know how traffic goes. So and there are people who go against traffic, and you all now know that there's a story. There's a story behind the person that goes against traffic. There's always a story. But here in the Harabais, they're going to now know. Chutz mi mi'isha davashuhu makif l'smol. Somebody who's got a story, says the Mishnah. I know it sounds like I'm speaking cryptically, but somebody who's got a story, he doesn't make a right-hand turn. He makes the unusual left-hand turn when he goes in. And obviously he'll be walking against traffic. And now it alerts people. And so now, malacha makif small. And so people are going to ask him, buddy, now, so funny, how are they going to ask him? So there's the New York way, and then there's the out of town way. What would you prefer? Now he's making a left hand turn. So, and you say to him, so what are you making the left hand turn for? So malacha makif small shani. Aval hashochet. I'm sorry. Shani avel. Hashochem b'bayit zeh yinach mecha. So one answer he could give you is that I'm an avel. Okay, meaning the Mishnah is doing in kind of a roundabout fashion, but the Mishnah is telling us. So you walk in and you're an avel, so don't make a right hand turn, make a left hand turn. It's funny when the Mishnah says avel, meaning are we talking about the first 7 days of avelus? You're not allowed to leave your house. So maybe he's talking about within the first, 12 months of Avelus.
Why Avelim are restricted in their movement?
No, they're not restricted. In other words, you want to elicit a discussion. Right. You want people just simply to come over and discuss with you. You know, I'm a novel. You know, this person's a novel. You know, in other words, he doesn't want to tell people, but he wants people to know. That's pretty much what the Mishnah is describing. I don't want to tell people I'm a novel, but I'd like people to know. Okay. So Ashochem Babaizeh Yinach Mecha. Shani Menudeh. Or another answer may be, I'm excommunicated.
So why would
you be
able to come in?
Yeah. So Ashochem Babaizeh Yitem Belebcha Divra Meir. So what's the appropriate response, right? Talk about an awkward conversation. All right, so I'm excommunicated. All right. congratulations, Mazel Tov, what should be the appropriate response to someone saying to you that he's excommunicated? Now, Michael's asking a good question. If he really is excommunicated, he shouldn't be in public. Okay. Oh, yeah, he talks about it. Yeah, what's he doing in the Harabais area? Okay, it's a reasonable question, and I don't have a good response. But anyway, he's there, and he's excommunicated, and you know that because he's walking against traffic. So what you say to him, says the Mishnah, is you say to him, and there's a variance of opinions over here. So first we start with Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, Ashochem b'bayis hazeh, the one who rests in this house, meaning, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yitain b'libcha v'yikavucha. He should find it in his heart. Now in the Mishnayos, b'libam. Should put it in their heart in order to draw you near. Meaning, that Beis Din that puts you in nidui. I don't know what's with them, but I hope they find it in their heart to bring you back. That's how Rav Meir says, that's the appropriate response to this person who's in Chayrim. Now, Amalei Rav Yossi, so Rav Yossi says to Rav Meir, that's terrible. Well, really? That's how you're going to respond to him? That should not be the proper response. Asisim ki'ilu avru alav esadin. Because think about what you're saying right now. It sounds like what you're saying is, you were unjustly placed in Chayrim. And I hope that Beis Din finally figures them, works it out amongst themselves. Meaning, that's not what you want to say. That's not the kind of message that you want to impart to this person. If he's in Chayrim, let's give the Beis Din the benefit of the doubt. Let's assume that they put you in Chayrim because you deserve to be put in Chayrim. Okay. So, it seems to be the machlok between Rav Meir and Rav Yossi is, how do we view this person? Do we view this person as innocent or as guilty? Hard to think that Rav Meir would actually, right. It's hard to see it that way, and maybe there's a better way to understand Rav Meir, and I don't know what that better way would be. But anyway, Rav Yossi says, I don't agree. So what do you say, Allah? Hashochein b'bayis hazeh yitein b'libcha v'sishma l'divrei chaverecha v'yirkavucha. What I hope is what you should say to the menuda, is I hope you find the right words to say back to the judges so that they see that you deserve a second chance and to remove you from your nidui. So in other words, nothing. The judges are right. They're good in what they did. I hope you get your act together. Okay. And a good line from the Rambam, meaning, you know, alongside the our Mishnayos over here, we don't have Rashi and Tosfos. We have the Rambam, we have the Rush, and I mostly turn to the Rush on the bottom of the Amud for the simple pshat of the Mishnayos. But the Rambam writes over here, Divrei Rabbi Yossi Emes, meaning, right, I only hear Rabbi Yossi's side to this discussion, writes the Rambam. Okay, Mishnah Gimel. We're on the top of Lamed Hey and Aleph. We continue. Lefnim mimenu soreg gavoa yutfachim. So, the way the Mishnayos are going over here is that we just keep going interior, meaning that we were outside the Harabais, we experienced the basic surroundings of the Harabais. Where are you going to find most of the room out there in the Harabais? And now we're going to keep going interior. So interior to that now is we're approaching the Azara. But the first thing you're going to be hitting is not the Azara itself. You're going to be hitting a little wall around the Azara. It's called the Soreg. It's almost like a fence. Now, I don't know. All I know is a sketch of what it looks like. I don't have a good picture in my mind of what the Soreg looks like. But it's basically an exterior fence that goes around the entire Azara. Okay, so on this picture over here, it's the excuse me. It's the black line. Okay, that goes around. Meaning the Azara is this thick black line over here. This perimeter area around it is called the area of the Soreg. Then, immediately after the Soreg, we're going to see this inside the Mishnah, I'll just say it outside, there are steps going up to the Azara. The Azara is at the pinnacle of the mountain. That's at the zenith of the mountain. So all around there are steps going up. These steps are an area, in other words, the area between the Soreg and the wall of the Azara is the area called the Chel. Okay, see this in the Mishnah. Now the Soreg itself is 10 tefachim high. The walls are 10 tefachim high. It's a fence. It's not high. You're not talking about grand walls over here. You're talking about basically a 3-foot wall. You could see really easily over the top of it. And then when you go around the Soreg, you're going to find 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 openings around the Soreg, and they were not there originally, but when the Yavanim came, and the Yavanim descended on Yerushalayim and into the Beis HaMikdash, and they were Mitam of the Beis HaMikdash, and the Mishnah already made reference to that back in the first parak, so they made breaches in it. Right, when we sing, you know, when we sing the Ma'ud Sor, right? So we say Yavanim ufartzu pirtzos chamos migdalai v'timnu kol hashmanim. Right? They made pirtzos. They made breaches in the walls. So there are 13 of them around, and the Mishnah goes on to say the gazru kenegdam yud gimel hishtachavayos. So that now, historically, whenever you pass by one of these areas, so the rabbis made a decree that you bow, as a way of remembering that we were subjugated by the Greeks and that we rebelled and we successfully conquered. Right? Everyone understand that's Hanukkah? Okay. So, lifnim mimenu achel. Now, interior to the Soreg, this fence that goes around now, you have the Chel. The Chel, again, is... Now, I'm not giving you the Rambam. The Rambam has a whole different view of what the Chel is. But I'm giving it to you the way the Rush presents it, is just simply the area in between the Soreg and the wall of the Azara. Steps going up. Esar Amos, now it's 10 Amos. Ushneim Esar Ma'alos Hayusham. Now there were 12 steps to get from the, after you pass through the Soreg, to go up to the Azara, 12 steps up. So just think about this now. It is 10 Amos interior, meaning 10 Amos to go from the Soreg to the Azara. It's this space over here. This space over here. And it's 12 steps. So, how long is the ledge of each one of these steps? obviously can't be an amma, because if a step is an amma in length, so that means 12 steps equals 12 ammas. That's not going to work. So you'll see Hayusham Rom Malachati Amma Vishilcha Chati Amma. So now we're going to get dimensions of steps. And the dimension of the step is a half an amma by half an amma. Now, you're right, I don't know who here is in construction, but to have steps going half an amma up and half an amma in does not sound like it's user friendly. Meaning that's like basically a foot up and a foot in. That only gets you six amas, which means that there was more area outside the steps. Correct.
Only the rise is not as high.
So there's a foyer before and after.
Probably. Right. Yeah. Correct. And the picture kind of depicts that as well. Okay. And not only that, in other words, and I'm pointing this out. I mean, it's whatever. It's just an observation. But it's not. It's unusual for steps to be, you know, even up and even across. But and then the Mishnah goes on to say, and by the way, all the steps were like that. Kol amalos shayusham ramala chatiyama v'shulcha chatiyama. All steps are going to be like that. Chutz, with of course exception. Every rule's got an exception. Chutz mishal ulam. When you go into the ulam. Right, the ulam now is right over here. It's the antechamber. It's the foyer before you go into the heichal. It's this big area over here. So before going up, there are 12 steps to go from the azara up into the ulam. So these 12 steps do not operate with the same half-half. Half amma up, half amma in. You can see it over here in the picture already. It's three steps and then what's that thing called? No, when the steps make a landing. Thank you. Three steps up, then a landing. Three steps up, then a landing. Okay. Kol apsachim shayu sham gavoa chaf amma v'rachman esra amas. And other general construction rules regarding the base of Mikdash is that any entrance is generally going to be 20 by 10. 20 amas high, 10 amas across. Okay, that's your standard entrance into the temple. So, if you're going to enter through the gate of Yechaniah, the gate of the Mokad, the Shar HaNashim, the Shar HaShir, whatever gate you're going to go into, Shar Nikanor, so it's going to be generally 10 by 20. 10 across, 20 up. So, it's a big entrance. Meaning, if you want to try to envision, you're talking about, again, approximately 20 feet by 40 feet. 40 feet up in the air. It's a four-story entrance. It's huge. Chutz mishal ulam, but you want to talk about huge now, however, the entrance to the ulam again, that foyer, that antechamber, before the heichal, that was even larger. That was 20 by 40. Okay, you talk about a huge entrance. Kol apsachim shayusham hayulahem delasos. Every entrance going into the Beit HaMikdash had doors. Chutz mishal ulam, again, with exception to the ulam. Ulam did not have a door. We talked not that long ago about a screen, some sort of curtain that is in front of the ulam, so they're just there's simple privacy. But generally speaking, every other entrance had a doorway. Kol asharim shayusham hayulam shkafos. All doorways had a lintel, meaning it was rectangular in shape, right? With posts going up and a lintel going across, and it looked like our doorpost. Chutz mishal tedi. Except for the tedi entrance. You remember from yesterday, the tedi entrance, one of the entrances of Har HaBayis. Which one was it? The one to the north?
North.
Right, Mishnah Gimel, the first parak. Tedi min atzafon. The tedi entrance was from the north. So it didn't have a lentil. What? How do you have an entrance without a lentil? So, shayusham shnei avanim motos zu agav zu. Looked like a teepee. It was triangular in shape. So that basically now, it, right?
This was towards the
Persians,
right? No. The Persians was the one to the east. That was a Shushan. That was a Shushan gate. So not here. This is the Ezra's Nashim.
Yeah.
You know, out there. Oh. So I'm sorry, north, up here.
No, not
no.
Huh? East, no.
No, Teddy was to the north.
No, the Persian one.
Persian was over here, but out there.
So
okay.
The north one, no one came through.
So. Yeah, it was a strange entrance. Kol Hashem Shayusham Mishanul. I'm sorry. Shayusham Shtei Avanim Motos Zeh Agav Zeh. It's a good question. Doesn't need it. It's not
because it's a
not a house of residence.
Emergency exit.
Kol hasha'ar shayisham nishtanu liyoshel zahav. Chutz mishar nikanim mibnei shenasna behem neis. Yishomim mibnei shenechashtam matziv. All doorways were plated gold. Right? Your general color of the Beis HaMikdash was gold. Right? We'll talk a lot about this. Right? Almost everything was gold. Especially once you walk into the Eichal, then came out everything was gold. Menorah was gold. Table was gold. Mizbech was gold. I mean, gold was the color. Which makes it a little bit strange that the Kohen Gadol can't wear gold. You know.
Yeah.
He can't wear gold when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim because in Kategor it's not the Sanegor. Even though it's now you realize how odd that is. I understand it. I don't think I'm not asking it as a question. But it's so strange though because everything that surrounds him is going to be gold. But okay. All doorways are gold. And the only exception to that rule is going to be the Shar Nikanor. The main entrance coming in from the east side is the Nikanor gate. That's not gold. Why not? So the Mishnah offers two explanations in terms of why it's not gold. Number one, because of a nes. So the Gemara in Yuma on Daf Lamed Ches tells the whole story of the Nicanor gates. The benefactor of the gate was a man by the name of Nicanor. Shipped in the gates, it was made up of a bronze color, and there was a terrible storm at sea. And so the sailor said, "We got to toss the gates aside. We got to make the boat more buoyant." And so they threw one of the gates aside, and he was gripping onto the other gate with his first dear life. And he said, "The gate goes, I'm going to go with it." To which they could have just simply said, "Okay, we're going to miss you."
Yeah.
I mean, you know, by Yonah, you know, he same similar storyline where they did throw Yonah. Now he agreed, of course, but all right. Anyway, so the and he was mispalal, and the storm subsided. He lost one of his gates, meaning the other. He did save one of his gates, but he lost the other gate. And so what happens is that when they come to shore, so miraculously the other gate washes ashore. And so people wanted to remember that story, so they kept the gates as it is. They didn't plate it with gold. Okay, that's one explanation in terms of why it is the gates were not gold; they were kept copper. And another explanation is because in Chashta Matziv, that the copper coloring was so bright and so shiny, it didn't need a gold plating. It almost looked gold. It almost looked yellow enough, meaning there's nothing intrinsic with it making gold. Gold is just simply a beautiful color. And so therefore they didn't need it because it looked already good enough. Right. Ezra's, Mishnah Dalet. All walls were big walls. Now, it's funny, because we learned not that many Mishnahs ago that the Soreg that surrounded was 10 Tfachim high. Now, a 3-foot wall is not much of a wall. Okay? Halachically, it is a wall, right? When we come back to Erevin, not that long from now, we're going to learn that the very height of a wall is going to be 10 Tfachim high. So it is halachically a wall, but that's about it. Meaning, legally it's a wall, it's not, you know, you're not going to put up a 3-foot wall to create a real barrier between you and somebody else. Okay. So all walls are going to be high, except for Kotel HaMizrachi, except for the eastern wall. Sha'akon ha-sarefetz ha-parah omed b'rosh har ha-mishcha, o'mitzkavim v'ro b'pisco shoheicha, b'shas ha-zayis adam. Because we're going to have the Kohen now burning the Paraduma. Now, by the way, did you notice our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that Shahakohen, the Kohen. Sounds a little bit like from our Mishnah, that's the Kohen Gadol. Doesn't have to be the Kohen Gadol, really could be any Kohen. Burning the Paraduma all the way out there. Now, Paraduma, you know, is burnt all the way there. Now, where am I pointing? I'm pointing, in other words, assuming here's the Ezra's Noshim, here's the Azara, here's the eastern entrance to the Ezra's Noshim, Harabais wall somewhere right about here. Okay? And so, out there, like really out there towards the east on Har HaMishkan and the Mount Olives. Right? You see Mount Olives? Mount Olives is probably right about where that coffee pot is.
It's up on the hilltop.
Now, it's up on the hilltop. So, in other words, you have the mountain sloping down, right? And then coming back up. So over there, he's on a mountain, and we're on a mountain, and he's burning the Paraduma. Well, first he's shechting the Paraduma, and then he's going to burn the Paraduma. And while sprinkling the blood in the direction of the Azara, he wants to be able to see into the Heichal. And so in order to facilitate that, we want all our walls to be high, except for this wall. The wall of the Har HaBayis, we don't want to be high because we want him to be able to look over that wall. The eastern wall of the Har HaBayis. We want him to be able to look over the wall. Now the Rambam over here gives unbelievable detail. I'm not going to go through the Rambam inside right now. We don't simply have the time for it. But if you want to see how the Rambam does basically elevations, meaning he sits there inch by inch, or in this case, amma by amma, and he actually works through the elevation so that he figures, and it's very meticulous, he figures how you could be standing right there in Har Mishka, look over the eastern wall, because the eastern wall is kept low, and then by looking through the entrance over here, through this entrance over here, right, over the Mizbeach, which is a neat trick, it's not so hard though, it can be done, over the Mizbeach, and basically into the Heichal. So he can have an unobstructed view from where he is in Har Mishka right into the Heichal. Now you don't get it's unbelievable. Yeah. You don't get a good sense of that from here because I got a flat two-dimensional picture. You really have to see the elevations in order to appreciate it. Yeah, he does it over there, right?
Yeah, very good job.
Okay, and the Rambam, I mean, basically he's following the Rambam. The Rambam scales it step by step. Here's what you should basically see if you want to do a good visualization of this floor plan over here. From east to west, it's always going up. Okay, meaning it doesn't slope. I mean, it's built into a mountain. If you're at all, in other words, we live in flat Florida. Our largest mountain is on sample, and it's a large trash bin. Right, but if you want a good sense of what's going on over here, it's basically the mountain sloping up from east to west, and so what's happening is that we carve, we put the Azara, and then it goes up, and then it comes here, and then it goes, and it always continuously goes up. Okay. Mishnah Hey. Ezra Sanash Mais Arach Mea Shloshim Ama Vechamesh Al Rochav Mea Vishloshim Vechamesh. Ezra's Nashim, okay? Women's courtyard. Again, not confined to women, not limited to just women. It's called the women's courtyard simply because this is typically where the women would go up to. The women would not go into the Azara. Were they prohibited from going into the Azara? I don't think so. Now, if she was Tamea, then obviously she would be prohibited. But if assuming that she is not Tamea, so I don't think that she's prohibited, but typically, no, typically she would not go. What happened over here in the Ezra's Nashim, Sukkos is where this became like the central point in Yerushalayim. Ezra's Nashim on Sukkos, they would have the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Right? If you could see over here on my small little diagram, you see these... I don't even know what... they are lamps. They are huge lamps. On Sukkos, they would light them. And they would create enough illumination so that the entire city of Yerushalayim would get illuminated from these four lamps over here. They were huge lamps. To my knowledge. And originally what happened was that the men and women would congregate over here for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Remember the fifth parak in Sukkah, where they talked about how it just wasn't working out so well. There was a lack of tzniyus. So then what they did is they created balconies. So you see the Gezuz Tra'ot. The balcony over here for the women, balcony over here for the women, so the women went on top of the balcony over here, and the men were on the bottom. So ironically enough, the men were in the Ezra's Nashim. Right? I know it sounds a little strange, but that's how Sukkos looked, and the women were on top of the balcony. The halachas of Mechitza, where are you going to find them in the Shulchan Aruch? And that's correct, you won't. The halachas of Mechitza are not to be found. But whenever we make a Beis HaMikdash, a Beis HaKnesses, we want to model it after the Beis HaMikdash. So Rav Moshe writes in one of his tshuvas that if you're doing the floor plan from scratch, he says, I'm telling you, make a balcony. Meaning, obviously, you want to separate the men from the women. Obviously, they did in the Beis HaMikdash. We want to mimic the same thing as well. So what many shuls do, our shul does it, so I would say most shuls do it, is that they separate the men and the women. They have mechitza going down to separate the men from the women. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in one of his tshuvas, if I had my druthers, and you asked me, I'd tell you, make a balcony. Because that's what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. They had a balcony for where the women were. He says, I think it's a preferred way to make a shul. Okay. Ezra, so it was 135 by 135 amos, so the Ezra's Nashim was in fact a perfect square. Vidal Shakos Hayu Bedalid Maxiosav Shamem Mem Amma. And then there were four chambers in the four corners of the Ezra's Nashim. Were they interior? So the picture that I have in front of you over here has them interior. Some put them on the outside of the Ezra's Nashim. Either way. And they had no roofs over the top of them. And they're going to be like that as well. Now, keturos means they didn't have a roof over their top. Now, what were they used for? So in other words, so now we have four chambers in the Ezra's Nashim. Dromus Mizrachi, so we're going to start now in the southeast. Generally speaking, that's how we do it. Meaning, if you've been following now, every time we've been taking a floor plan tour, we start in the southeast and we go counterclockwise. For reasons which I don't understand, we didn't do that in the Beis HaMokad. Remember yesterday in the first parak when we were describing the Beis HaMokad, we didn't start in the southeast. I'm not sure why. But anyway, so southeast over here, Haisa Lishkas HaGezirim. So where am I?
Over there.
Right, this is my north, south. Okay, Lishkas HaNizirim, sorry. Shisha HaNizirim, Mevashlim, Shisham HaNizirim, Mevashlim, Es Shalmehem, Omegalchen Es Sa'aram, Omishalchen Tachas Hadud. Nazir has one of the more unusual practices that the Torah mandates, which is that when he cuts his hair, after having grown it during his Nazirus, he cuts all of his hair and he places it under the pot that's cooking the leg of his shlamim, and the hair is placed under the pot. Where is all this occurring? Right here, in the southeast corner of the Ezra's Nashim, the Lishkas and Nazirim. Mizrachit Tzfon is now we're going to go to the northeast because we go counterclockwise. He has a lishkas ha'etzim. Okay, that's where the wood is. Shisham kohanim bali mumim matliim ha'etzim. What you do is you have kohanim who are bali mumim. They're blemished kohanim. They can't do the avoda. So, but they're put to use, meaning you can't do the avoda. Okay, there's something else you could do. So they go here to lishkas ha'etzim and they deworm the wood. Okay, not glorified work, but
why there was no top on it?
Somebody
there was no roof.
Yeah, so
the wood would get wet all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where it went. Had a ground crew.
What?
Stewart's suggesting that there was a ground crew. Now, for you, my friend, who do not really attend baseball games with any frequency, you have no idea what Stewart's saying right now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine. I don't know. It's a fair question. So, Babale Moma Matlina Eitzim V'chol Eitzche Nimsa Botolas Pasome Agabe Amizbech. And wood that has a worm inside, it's infested with worms, cannot be used for the Mizbech. It's a lack of kavon. And so, therefore, so they needed the Kohanim to examine the wood for worms. Tzfonis Maravis, we're now in the northwest. So he Aisa Lishkas Mitzorayim. So this is where the Mitzorahs were. Maaravis, and by the way, when we say the Mitzorah, so what we mean by that is, right, that's where they hang out? No, obviously not. Meaning, the Mitzorah, first of all, the Mitzorah is Chutz HaMachaneh, right? Mm-hmm. During his duration of his Tahara, he's outside the camp. He's not in the Harabais.
That's
he's not...
The out pouch change as opposed to...
Right, he's not in Yerushalayim. He's out. So what we mean by that is on the day that he's going to receive his final Tahara, which is the eighth day, so he's going to be coming in, but he's not going to go any further than the Ezra's Nashim. Remember that until he brings his Karbanos on the eighth day, he is prohibited from entering into the Azara. So one of the areas in the Ezra's Nashim, and we've said this repeatedly, Ezra's Nashim is not the Azara. It is Harabayas. So that's where the Mitzorah would be. Amar Marav is he Isa Lishkas Mitzrayim. Marav is Dramis. Now we are in the southwest. Amar Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. I'm counting. I don't know why, but this is our third reference of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov in the Mishnayos. Shachachti ma shahisa mishameshes. I forgot. Author of our Mishnayos Midos tells us, makes a very honest appraisal. He does not remember what was in the southwest. Abishal Omer Sheshema Yunostim Yain Veshemin. Abishal then tells us that it was where the oil and the wine were kept, presumably for the Nesachim. He Isa Nikris Lishkas Beis Shamnaya, and it was called the Lishka of Oil. Vechalak Isa Berosha, and it was smooth. The Kifur Kitzotzrash Anashim Ra'im Alamalav Anashim Melamatan Kidei Shelo Yemuravin. Women were kept up top in the balcony, as I described earlier. Men were in the bottom. The Tezvav Mahalos Ro'os Milamalan. And now, 15 steps. V'anashim Milamatan Kidei Shelo Yemuraven. I'm sorry. The Tezvav Mahalos Olos Mitocha La'ezros Yisrael. Now, you wanted to go up from Ezros Nashim up to Ezros Yisrael, so you walked up 15 steps. Right, Shir Hamalos, David HaMelech, when he penned Tehillim, so somewhere in the Kufs, so he where it starts in Kuf Chaf, somewhere thereabouts, right? I hit it right on the head.
Yeah.
Good for me. Kuf Yutes. Here's what I figured. Kuf Yutes is a really long one.
That's the really long one.
That's the one that with 176 psukim.
That's the one that when we're in that class in France. And we're bad because of
that
decision. Okay, just
memorize one.
Memorize one.
Right.
Kuf Yutes.
And they had
your
memory. And it's very simple. Kuf Yutes. They take the Aleph base of 22 letters, and for each one they give 8 psukim. So 8 times 22. Okay, 176. And Parshas Naso has 176. And Baba Basra has 176 blot. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there are people out there who like that.
And we read Parsha
after Shavuot. Anyway.
What has 176
blot? Baba Basra, the longest Masechta, has 176 blot. But it's been reported to me, I don't know if this is correct, that it's somewhat of a misnomer. Baba Basra is not the longest Masechta by words. Right. The Dapim are extraordinarily short because the commentary to the Baba Basra is not Rashi, it's the Rashbam. And the Rashbam had a totally different style than his grandfather did. And so therefore, he filled up a lot of the real estate on the page of Baba Basra. Right. So Mitochel Ezros Yisrael. So you want to go now up from the Ezros Nashim up to the Ezros Yisrael. Now, the names are a little bit misleading, so don't get misled. Meaning, once you're in Ezros Yisrael, that means that you walk through the Nicanor Gate already. So that means that when you're in Ezros Yisrael, you're in the Azara, right? Hello, you're in the Azara. It just is called Ezros Yisrael because, much like by Ezros Nashim, that's typically where the women would stop. Meaning, the women wouldn't go past Ezros Nashim. If you were not a Kohen, you would go into the Azara, but you wouldn't go past this point called the Ezros Yisrael. Over here on the diagram that I have in front of you, so past the Nicanor Gate. Ezros Yisrael goes in a little bit, and then another elevation, and that's where the rest of the Azara was.
Oh, it goes up again after
Ezros Yisrael? Yeah. The Tezvav Mahalos Olos, we're going to read about it. Tezvav Mahalos Olos Mitochel Ezros Yisrael connected Tezvav Mahalos Shebetehelam. Sha'aleim alevim ormin b'shir aloyu trutos ela mukafos kechatzi goren agula. The steps going up from the Ezros Nashim to the Ezros Yisrael were semicircular. Okay, the picture does a beautiful job depicting that. And this is now the platform going up. And by the way, in other words, once you know the rules of the steps, so then you can figure out easily all these elevations. Meaning, I asked you a question. What's the elevation height difference between Ezros Nashim and Ezros Yisrael? So you know it's 15 steps. You know each step is a half amma. So you know that the elevation from Ezros Nashim up to Ezros Yisrael is going to be 7.5 Tvachim, right? And the correct answer is Amma. Okay, just want to make sure everyone was listening. Yeah, the Lishkos Hayu or Mishnah Vav. Velishkos Haytachas Esis Yisrael. Upsuchos Ezros Anashim. So now, as you go into Ezros Yisrael, there are going to be two lishkos. We already talked about them once before. We get to talk about them again. They open up into the Ezros Nashim. And they are Shesham Alevim Nostim Kinoz V'Naval Mumatzalsayim V'Chol Klishir. This is where the orchestra stored all of its instruments. Okay, so in the picture over here, I'm over here, I'm over here. This is the area of the storage. Ezra Yisrael Haisa Orech Me'ama V'Shloshim V'Chamesh Arochav Achat Esrei. Ezra Yisrael was 135 by 11, meaning 135 from north to south, 11 amas from the Nicanor gate right up to the steps. And then we get to Ezra's Kohanim. And that was 135 by 11. And you had some sort of marker, I'm not really sure what it was, that separated Ezra's Yisrael from the Kohanim so that people knew, if you're a Yisrael, this is pretty much the end of the road for you. You stop over here, or you only go past this if you're a Kohen. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, our fourth mention of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Ma'ala Haisa Gavoa Amma Va'aduchin Ason Alaha. There was an elevation, a platform, a landing, that was an Amma high. The Duchin, a platform, was on top of it. U'bashal Shma'alo Shel Chatzi Chatzi Amma. Three steps, each one being a half an Amma elevation. Nimsa Zezrak Skoanim Gavoa Me'ezis Yisrael Shtei Amma Sumechza. So now, you take that one Amma elevation, and the three steps, each one of them being a half an amma elevation, you put it all together, and to go from Ezra Yisrael up to Ezra's Kohanim, 2.5 ammas. Kol Azar Haitza Orech Me'ah V'Shmonim V'Sheva Arochav Me'ah V'Shoshim V'Chamesh. Okay, now, the entire Azara, and we're including Ezra Yisrael, because that's part of the Azara, length and width is 135 by 187. 135 from north to south, 187 from east to west. So it's a rectangular shape. And there were 13 bowings. Now, we already described the 13 bowings as you went around the Soreg. 13 bowings as you go into the Azara. Abba Yossi ben Chanan, Omer, can I get you Gimel Sharem? Against the 13 gates. Now, this is where it gets a little bit confusing. You remember back in Tamid we described five entrances into the Azara. In the first parak of Midos we described seven entrances into the Azara, and now we're going to be describing 13 entrances into the Azara. Is everyone thoroughly confused? Good. Drum. Sorry, it's a little sarcasm, a little too much. Yigimel Sha'arim. And now Akash Baruch Hu is telling me. That was a little too much sarcasm. Yud Gimel Sha'arim Dromim Smuchim Lamarav. So, I'm sorry. Can I get Yud Gimel Sha'arim? Pause. Dromim Smuchim Lamarav. And now we're going to get a tour of all the entrances into the Azara. So here we're going to be going around a rectangular Azara, and we're going to point to 13 different entrances. Smuchim Lamarav. So we're starting in the south, and we're going to go from west to east. So we're hitting, this picture is perfect. Boom, 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 boom. These four entrances from the west to the east. Shar HaElyon. Yeah. Shar HaElyon, Shar HaDelek, Shar HaBechoros, Shar HaMayim. Okay, so this picture that I have in front of me right over here, right, perfect in synchronicity with what we're reading in the Mishnah. Why is this one called Shar HaMayim? Because on Sukkos, this is where the water is coming up. The Ma'ayan, the wellspring in which we collect the water, is down there towards the south. It's brought through this entrance over here, up the ramp, and deposited on the southwest corner of the ramp, on Sukkos, all 8 days. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, was this number five already? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Bo Hamayim Mavchin Vasidim Liyotzim Mitachas Miftan Abayis. There is a river that actually runs through the Lishka. Now, in this picture over here, I have no visual of where this river is, and it eventually exits through the Shar HaMayim. Ulamasam et Safon Smuchin Lamarav. Now we're going to go.
What was Shar Elyon
for? Shar Elyon? I don't know. But remember, though, here's what I can tell you. Sorry. Because there was an elevation, a continuous elevation, this was the highest point. So Shar Elyon means the high point.
But who would go to it?
I don't know.
It wasn't built
well. Now, Ulamasam et Safon, now we're on the north. And we're going to do the same thing. We're going to go from west to east. Smuch Lamar Shar Yechanya. Yechanya was, do you remember, the king who was exiled during the rule of Nebuchadnezzar. And he was exited through this gate. Shar Yechanya also doubles as the Nitzotz gate that we described earlier in the Masechta. Shar HaKarban, Shar HaNashim, Shar HaShir. Now part of the confusion is that Shar HaKarban, for example, is also the Beis HaMokad. Right? So sometimes it's called Beis HaMokad, sometimes it's called Shar HaKarban. Okay. So that was the four in the south and the four in the north, and now we're on the east side.
Why is there a woman's gate?
This is the Nicanor gate we've been talking about at length. On its side, there were two side entrances. Remember, not that long ago, we described that no one enters through the south. People only went into the north, Pishpesh. Ushnaim b'ma'arav, and there were two gates in the west, lo hayalahem shem. No name. No name gates. They didn't have a sponsor. I don't think that's it. I think that there were gates, but they were not used. That's my suggestion for today. Adron Acharabais, that's the end of the second parak. Tomorrow, we continue with the third parak of Midos.